established which you are bound to complete. There is no life that is not short. Compared with the world of nature, even Nestor's life was a short one, or Satya's, the woman who bade carve on her tombstone that she had lived 99 years. Some persons, you see, boast of their long lives. But who could have endured the old lady if she had had the luck to complete her 100th year? It is with life as it is with a play. It matters not how long the action is spun out, but how good the acting is. It makes no difference at what point you stop. Stop whenever you choose. Only see to it that the closing period is well turned. Farewell. Letter 78. On the Healing Power of the Mind. That you are frequently troubled by the snuffling of catarrh, and by short attacks of fever which follow after long and chronic catarrhal seizures, I am sorry to hear, particularly because I have experienced this sort of illness myself, and scorned it in its early stages. For when I was still young, I could put up with hardships and show a bold front to illness. But I finally succumbed, and arrived at such a state that I could do nothing but snuffle, reduced as I was to the extremity of thinness. I often entertained the impulse of ending my life then and there, but the thought of my kind old father kept me back, for I reflected not how bravely I had the power to die, but how little power he had to bear bravely the loss of me. And so I commanded myself to live, for sometimes it is an act of bravery even to live. Now, I shall tell you what consoled me during those days, stating at the outset that these very aids to my peace of mind were as efficacious as medicine. Honorable consultation results in a cure, and whatever has uplifted the soul helps the body also. My studies were my salvation. I place it to the credit of philosophy that I recovered and regained my strength. I owe my life to philosophy, and that is the least of my obligations. My friends, too, helped me greatly toward good health. I used to be comforted by their cheering words, by the hours they spent at my bedside, and by their conversation. Nothing, my excellent Lucilius, refreshes and aids a sick man so much as the affection of his friends. Nothing so steals away the expectation and the fear of death. In fact, I could not believe that, if they survived me, I should be dying at all. Yes, I repeat, it seemed to me that I should continue to live, not with them, but through them. I imagined myself not to be yielding up my soul, but to be making it over to them. All these things gave me the inclination to succor myself and to endure any torture. Besides, it is a most miserable state to have lost one's zest for dying and to have no zest in living. These, then, are the remedies to which you should have recourse. The physician will prescribe your walks and your exercise. He will warn you not to become addicted to idleness, as is the tendency of the inactive invalid. He will order you to read in a louder voice and to exercise your lungs, the passages and cavity of which are affected, or to sail and shake up your bowels by a little mild motion. He will recommend the proper food and the suitable time for aiding your strength with wine, or refraining from it, in order to keep your cough from being irritated and hacking. But, as for me, my counsel to you is this, and it is a cure, not merely of this disease of yours, but of your whole life. Despise death. There is no sorrow in the world when we have escaped from the fear of death. There are these three serious elements in every disease: fear of death, bodily pain, and interruption of pleasures. Concerning death, enough has been said, and I shall add only a word. This fear is not a fear of disease, but a fear of nature. Disease has often postponed death, and a vision of dying has been many a man's salvation. You will die, not because you are ill, but because you are alive. Even when you have been cured, the same end awaits you. When you have recovered, it will be not death, but ill health that you have escaped. Let us now return to the consideration of the characteristic disadvantage of disease. It is accompanied by great suffering. The suffering, however, is rendered endurable by interruptions. For the strain of extreme pain must come to an end. No man can suffer both severely and for a long time. Nature, who loves us most tenderly, has so constituted us as to make pain either endurable or short. The severest pains have their seat in the most slender parts of our body, nerves, joints, and any other of the narrow passages hurt most cruelly when they have developed trouble within their contracted spaces. But these parts soon become numb, and by reason of the pain itself, lose the sensation of pain, whether because the life force, when checked in its natural course and changed for the worse, loses the peculiar power through which it thrives and through which it warns us, or because the diseased humors of the body, when they cease to have a place into which they may flow, are thrown back upon themselves, and deprive of sensation the parts where they have caused congestion. So gout, both in the feet and in the hands, and all pain